Hi, I'm Femi Okay. This week on The Stream, we are teaming up with the United Nations to tackle some major global issues. If you're on YouTube right now, be in the comment section and be in the show. Today, our theme is looking at the millions of people currently displaced by the climate crisis and the millions of people who will be in the future. Here's Ritu to get our conversation started.
The World Bank report states that by 2050, 216 million migrants would be created as a result of impacts of climate change. Now, these migrants, in absence of any safety net or survival strategy, they're forced to pursue risky coping mechanisms. For example, taking loan from agents who then push them into debt bondage because they're unable to pay that loan, or falling prey to sex traffickers, or trying to cross border for survival, where they're then pushed into hard labor or prostitution. The worst thing is, these climate impacts are set to worsen. With a 2.5 degree global warming trajectory, these events will become twice as frequent and intensity.
Let's meet your guests. Hello, Andrew. Hello, Hindu. Hello, Merivon. So good to have all three of you with us today. Andrew, please say hello to the international audience. Tell them who you are and what you do.
My name's Andrew Harper. I'm the High Commissioner's Special Advisor for Climate Action, and we're very much engaged in trying to not only protect the world's most vulnerable populations, but to build up preparedness and resilience of those generous states that are hosting them.
Good to have you. Hello, Hindi. Welcome back to the stream. Always good to have you with us. Remind our audience who you are and what you do.
Hi, everyone. My name is Hindu Umaru Ibrahim. I am from Chad, from a Mbororo pastoralist communities who are already living and experiencing the climate change impact in their daily life.
Thank you so much for bringing your expertise to the stream. And Mary Vaughan, welcome back to the stream as well. Always great to have you on the show. Remind our audience who you are and what you do in the context of today's conversation.
Thanks, Oki. My name is Ivona Kisoya. I'm the mayor of Freetown, the capital city of Sierra Leone, and climate is one of the forefront issues that we're tackling in Transform Freetown. But besides and beyond what I do in my city, I'm also the co-chair of the C40 MMC Global Task Force on Climate and Migration. So seeing the perspective not just from my city, but from cities across the globe.
All right, we have so much expertise today. Audience, of course, you can ask some questions anytime. I'm going to start with a close-up of Andrew's face. I'm going to ask him a question, and I want to see I want to see his reaction. What's his reaction? Andrew, when people talk to you about, we have an issue with climate refugees, when you hear that phrase, be honest, take the filter off, what do you say?
This is one of the problems, and like, you're not being fair. But the things with climate refugees, it's not recognised under international law. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Because refugees are a specific group of people who have fled or been persecuted and crossed an international border. What we often don't recognise when we're talking about climate-impacted populations is that they haven't actually crossed a border. The people are being impacted and they're staying within the state's boundaries. They don't move unless they're not being supported enough. So the vast majority of people who are being impacted today, they're not moving. They don't want to move. They want to stay within their communities. They're the ones who are being the most vulnerable. They're being impacted. But if there's no choice, if there's no support to adaptation, if there's no support to mitigation, then, of course, they will move to where they can find safety and dignity and a life. So when we talk about refugees, it's a very specific terminology, and this is why you asked it. Mm-hmm. It means when people have been forced across a border. That being said, 90% of the world's refugees have come from a climate impacted country. So there's generally a nexus between climate and conflict. It may not necessarily be that clear, mm-hmm. but it's something which we are sort of studying much more. And so... Yeah. Our job is to ascertain what is driving people, why do they need protection, and to make sure they get that protection.
So people using that phrase may be mistaken, but the situation is very serious. Hindu, I went to your Twitter feed, and let's have a look at this pinned tweet. And Hindu pinned this tweet last August, and another flood in my hometown. People are losing lives, shelters, resources, especially women and children becoming displaced and refugees in their own city. Hindu, this is climate change impact on people's lives right now. Tell us more.
That's true. So when we talk about the climate change and the impact, people seems like it's far. But it is happening in the daily life of the communities. And of course, as you just saw in the Twitter, those people live in this place for how many years with them children, their grandchildren, and just one night flood come and destroy all where they are living, all their livelihood, and they're becoming, from one second to another one, a refugee in their own hometown. They have to move from this place and be no one and sitting nowhere and without any official recognition, as Andrew said. And it is actually happening just last week in South Sudan. All communities become entirely refugee. They cannot move in their own place. They have to become inside the country or move outside the country in order to get just a space to sit down.
Hindu, I'm really glad you mentioned South Sudan because my colleague Hiba Morgan, who's an Al Jazeera English correspondent, she was reporting on that flood situation just a little while ago, like where we are in Sudan, a little bit further north than South Sudan. Here she is reporting on the flooding.
This is what Nuela village in Sudan state of White Nile now looks like from above. It once had more than 80 homes, housing dozens of families. But heavy rains in the east of the country resulted in flash floods that left the houses in ruins.
These houses belong to me and my children. The waters came at night about a week ago and started flooding the village. They just moved in, but now everything is gone. I've managed to save this cupboard, but it's destroyed. I don't know what will happen next.
The only way to reach Nuela now is by boat, and many of the villagers are using them to pick up whatever they can salvage.
Mervon, I'm just looking at a tweet that Natty sent us just a little while ago, and Natty says on Twitter, this is already happening here in Zambia, talking about people being displaced by climate change. People are migrating to the northern parts of Zambia, leading to loss of livelihoods, communities, and creating cultural conflicts. What are you finding happening in Sierra Leone, and particularly in Freetown?
Thanks. So the flooding is a feature. We've been working over the last 3 years since I've been mayor on flood mitigation activities, trying to reduce that, reduce the incidents and reduce the severity. But the reality is we've seen in these videos and as we've seen happening even in Europe this summer, is that this the level of rainfall, the abnormally heavy rainfall, which is associated with climate change, is a reality. And there's limits to what anyone can do to prevent that actually having consequences. That said, part of what we was shown in the video just now, the focus on the rains, tells half the story. The other half of the abnormal weather patterns is the lack of rain. So in as much as you have flooding, you also have drought. And what we're seeing in terms of the impact of these abnormal weather conditions is failure of crops, failure of farming communities, and an influx into the city. One of the statistics that you read out earlier is that 216 million people are going to be displaced by climate by 2050. We also have statistics that tell us that by 2050, 70% of the world's population is going to be living in cities. So we have this combined impact, which means cities need to be ready. Cities need to be ready to deal with that influx of population. We're seeing that already. But they've also got to be adaptive because most of these vulnerable people find themselves in more vulnerable situations. They become the slum dwellers, those living in informal settlements on steep hills or on the coastline. So you move, you're trying to escape the climate crisis, and you put yourself in harm's danger. This afternoon, I actually spent 3 hours with some colleagues, a consortium of NGOs who've been working with us for the last 2 years on developing an upgrade for informal settlement communities, both of whom are on the coast. So we see that the climate emergency is putting more pressure on cities across the world, and it's in particularly in the global south. Mm-hmm. And what we need to do as city leaders, as governments, is ensure that we're putting in place the resilient interventions, mitigation, adaptation, housing, job creation, because the people are going to come. We've also got to ensure that we are working in those areas, such as where my dear sister lives, where, you know, in the rural areas, there's got to be investment. There's got to be adaptation there as well. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we're seeing the impact, and we've got to respond. There's more coming. You mentioned 2.5 degrees. We know everybody's aiming at 1.5, but it's interesting that people are recognizing that 1.5 is unlikely to be achieved. So with that means adaptation, mitigation, it's got to be built in to government interventions now.
We know this is happening, Andrew, Hindu, and Mayor Yvonne. We know this is happening. We know more people will be displaced. Kigozi on Twitter just here says, Andrew, I'm going to put this to you, that in Uganda, most people think the village life is worse. But when they come to town, like Kampala, they end up sleeping on streets with no food. They start begging. Government should create medium income but high productive jobs. This is what Kigozi is suggesting as action that needs to happen. Andrew, what are you advising governments to do?
Well, I'm not too sure I'm the best person to advise governments, but I think what we need to be taking into account is that it's not just climate change that's impacting many of these countries. Like, if you look at anywhere from Africa to sub-Saharan Africa to Afghanistan, 60% of the populations rely on smallholder farming. There are other mega trends that are occurring other than climate change. You have urbanisation, as Yvonne was mentioning. You have a changing in livelihoods, which are also impacting populations. People are seeing that there is a future for them, which may not necessarily reflect where they are. What we're seeing with climate change, it's actually driving them. People may say it's a threat multiplier, but I'd actually like to say it's a vulnerability multiplier. Mm. And drawing back to your video then, that same area that was shot on the video, whether it be in South Sudan or in Sudan, they were hit last year by the same flooding.
Yeah.
Those populations, those villages, lost the animals that they had last year. Like, do you see any animals there alive? No. Mm-hmm. And if you had food stocks and you had seeds for the next planting season, they were all destroyed. So one of the big issues that Mayor Yvonne was mentioning was resilience. How long can communities continue to resist this onslaught, this cascading series of disasters one after another? And that's what climate change means. It's not some sort of hypothetical, statistical formula which comes up. It is storms, it is flooding, it is droughts that are impacting populations. They've got no choice. We've got teams in the field today evacuating refugees from Al Kana camp, 35,000 people. Where do they go? Like, you saw the situation there. It was completely devastated. The host communities who have been so generous in providing protection and support to these people, that was 75,000 people. They also had to move. So it's not some distant issue that can be put off until after COP26.
Yeah.
This is the life that it's people now on the front lines are now having to deal with.
Hindu, I've got some questions for you on YouTube. I'm going to share them with you. This is Warsam. I don't think we can do anything about it. They have not met you yet, Hindu. Maybe just talk about it. This is how life has always been. There's famine or natural disasters. Mitigation takes place and then life goes on. That feels like a shrug on YouTube. Hindu, reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can do a lot of things about it. The one thing that we need is how we can prevent all those disasters to do not be a continuous life for the communities. Because we cannot always wait until the disaster comes and run and give the response. This is already too late, but how we can prevent. So I think, firstly, the developed countries must take their responsibility and they must do it right now. We know that the G20 are going to meet. We know that the COP26 is going there. And actually now, the UN General Assembly is going on, the Climate Week. What are they doing there? They have to stop talking and just act. So when they act, they have to reduce the emission, not later by 2050 net zero. We know that many countries don't want to go net zero before 2060. Did they read the report of the IPCC that we're putting our communities and my communities to plus 3 degrees Celsius from the heat to the drought and all to flood? So this is not our responsibility. It is the developed countries' responsibility first. And secondly, to prevent it, I think we do have the also indigenous people's traditional knowledge where we can combine them with the science and give the exact weather forecast in order to prevent all the disasters that are coming. And then we need to do it in land management system. And we hear also what my sister Yvonne said. Of course, when people migrate, they just come in the cities and make the city more even harder. But of course, being in the villages, maybe they can get the solutions, but they need a specific attention there and a specific investment where they can still have continuous their life, livelihood, even they cannot get all what they need, but they can build from their own solution that they have, the traditional knowledge in their own hand. So we need to do that today. We can't wait at all. So that's what I have to give them as the response. And I think we can all work it together in partnership, because not the community beyond for themselves can do it, not the government for themselves by doing it, but together we must build all this prevention.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation, guests, and this is from Joanne Lin, who is being very pushy against the really big Western powerful nations, in particular the United States. Have a listen, have a look.
We are urging the Biden administration to use their temporary protected status authorities to designate TPS for those countries that have been afflicted by climate-related disaster. We are also urging the Biden administration to use their existing deferred enforced departure authority to provide immigration relief for those individuals coming from countries that have been affected by climate disaster. Third, we are asking U.S. immigration authorities to expand and interpret their definition of asylum law to take into account those people who are on the run because of climate change.
How effective is it, Yvonne, to be lobbying powerful governments to say you need to have a climate change policy, you need to be able to understand people are fleeing because of climate change?
I can see where Jan is coming from. When you look at the Global Compact on Migration and the principles within it, the objectives within it, this is moving the same direction. It's about how do we ensure that governments, the more wealthy countries, particularly the United States in this case, open their doors and receive migrants? For me, in as much as I respect that position, I also feel that it's missing a really fundamental aspect, and I prefer to focus on that. In the Global Compact of Migration, the third objective is to address the structural challenges which lead to migration, which fuel migration. And I think we'd be making a mistake to put our focus and emphasis on having, you know, immigration policies that are leading to welcoming. Yes, that's all well and good, but let's not take our eye off the ball. What we really need to be focused on is what do we do, as Hindu was saying, to ensure that governments stick to their commitments to reduce emissions so that we have a fighting chance of not seeing the temperature increases go to the levels which will make our planet unsustainable. And at the same time, ensure that we have investments being made into cities, into Global South countries, which are already, as we've seen in the video, as you've heard from the testimonies, which are already feeling the impact of climate change every day. So it's mitigation, focused mainly on the North and Western countries, adaptation, critical now in the Global South. And for this, there's two pieces which we need to put in place fast. One is access to finance for these adaptive measures, for the upgrade. We've just had this meeting, as I said. We are talking about 350,000 people living in formal settlements. Moving them out of harm's way will cost hundreds of millions of dollars. Where will that money come from? So I respect Joanne's view, but I would rather we were focusing on how we improve the lot of the people in these situations so that they're not forced to flee. How do we do the investments, as Hindu was saying? How do we ensure that there's investments in rural communities so that there is job creation? How do we ensure, as Andrew was saying, that we have the early warning systems so that we can predict and see where things are coming? So we're planning. So they're missing elements: development control, urban planning, nature-based solutions, you know, planting of trees. These are practical solutions that can make a difference now. I would really urge our focus to be in that direction.
Let me just show that Mary Yvonne is not just talking the talk, she's walking the talk. I was checking out her Twitter. Have a look here. She's talking about flood mitigation. She's sharing her paperwork. Can you read this? Request for funding in order to commence early cleaning of drainage within the municipality in respect of the Freetown Flood Mitigation Plan 2021. So you can see this is a mayor who's actually trying to alleviate some of the flooding that she knows is going to happen. I want to bring in Harjit here, Andrew. Have a listen to Harjit and then respond immediately off the back of him. This is the inevitability of populations moving because of climate change. Here he is, Andrew.
Climate change impacts such as floods, cyclones and sea level rise are already displacing millions of people and forcing them to flee their homes to survive and earn a living at a different location. Communities have a right to stay. Governments must provide measures such as safe infrastructure, housing, and new livelihood options to avoid distress migration. But some locations are not going to be livable anymore. In those circumstances, towns and cities need to be far more welcoming to migrants by providing them basic services like health, education, and shelter.
Andrew, people are moving. They're going to move.
I think what Mary Yvonne said was spot on. There's a number of elements we have to look at. Getting the G20 in particular to mitigate, because something which is not taken into account sufficiently is that 80% of the emissions, the carbon emissions globally, 80% come from the G20. Africa, for instance, contributes 2 or 3%. So this whole issue of who's responsible and who should be compensated still also has to be dealt with. It probably won't be in the COP26, but these issues, we need to be looking at the mitigation element. Nothing is inevitable. However, if the adaptation, the ability for people to adapt to the changing environment, is unable to deal with the consequences, then people will have to move. And we're already seeing that. But the only thing which I would say, and it was raised by the speaker just then, it's a combination of things. It's climate, it's looking for livelihoods, it's also urbanization. There will be mass migration in the future. So we have to be prepared for that. The science is out there, the evidence is out there. So there's no reason to be, there's no excuse, I would dare say, to be surprised by what happens in the future. But also there's no excuse to leave situations like in Freetown to themselves. So governments are important, but probably some of the most important and useful discussions are with people on the ground, and they're often the mayors, because they actually know what's going on.
Dan here on Twitter. Go ahead, Hindu.
It's really not an excuse to just to say they do not recognize that there is climate refugee and they have to put a definition in a separate way, because the climate refugee exists already. And we know that when all this catastrophe are around our cities, are around our communities, so people, how they can call themselves, they are not economic migrants. Mm-hmm. They are climate migrants, because they cannot leave just their home because they wanted to have more income. And also when we talk about that, you know, there are internal migrations that are very neglected, but there are also external migration. And you know how they are treating them when they are coming? As we are seeing, when they come to the cities, the street of the street, they also come in
the... You have the last word, Hindu. For now, Hindu, Mary Yvonne, Andrew, YouTube viewers and viewers around the world, thanks for being part of our show today. I'll see you next time. Take care, everybody.